Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2023. This is part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Charlie Schulz. Charlie spells his last name S-C-H-U-L-Z. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Charlie. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
Great. Charlie, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
You do have my permission.
Thank you. In the end of part 4, you had talked about a really nice hike you had done on the South Pass in 1983, in the fall of 83. Can you pick up your hiking exploits from there?
Okay. So September 3rd, 1983, I did rim to rim to rim, but I did it, I stayed in Cottonwood. And then I went to the North Rim the next day, and then back across on the third day.
So. You had talked about the difficulty of going from the South Rim trailhead down all the way down either the South Kaibab or the Bright Angel, crossing the Colorado River, and then hiking all the way up to Cottonwood in one day, with a backpack to spend the night and then. Do other things. How did you manage that?
Well, I didn't carry a lot of weight.
Okay.
There's water route, so that's one thing that's easier to handle. And it was September, early September, so although it's possible to have some bad weather, I didn't think there would be much bad weather. So I kind of packed fairly light.
Okay.
And he didn't even take a sleeping bag. I slept on one of the tables in Cottonwood with a blanket that I brought along, a little space blanket deal.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a tent or anything like that. And then when I got to the North Rim, I had a reservation. So I went and I had a room on the North Rim. And the high point of that was a helicopter landing to take somebody out who had fallen off the edge.
Oh my gosh.
Somewhere along the rim. I'm not sure exactly where.
Oh my gosh.
All of a sudden, this helicopter came whirling in and, it landed at that time where the Grand Canyon Association bookstore is now.
Wow. So right there in front of the North Rim Lodge.
Right. Yeah. And then they loaded the guy up and they took him out of there. So, but it's one of those things, you know, unless you're directly involved, you don't know much about it except stand around and watch.
Right.
That was it.
Huh.
So the next day I turned around and went back across the canyon and out the South Rim. Out the Bright Angel Trail, South Rim.
So you basically did a rim to rim that day then?
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting way of doing it. A 2-day crossing and then a 1-day back.
The next trip was October 15th.
Wow, you're like every other weekend almost here. Well, not quite, but
yeah, it didn't do my marriage much good, I can tell you.
Oh, okay.
But there were a lot of other things. It wasn't the canyon. So anyway, on October 15th, PL and a friend of his that he had worked with, and I went down Nankweep, down through Saddle Mountain, down to Nankweep Basin. And the next day, then CL and I hiked up to see. He knew about Kolb Arch up on the side canyon, so
okay.
We hiked up there to check that out. And I guess it was discovered by Goldwater at some point in time.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah.
That's
pretty close to the canyon wall too. It was how he found it or how he saw it. I have no idea, but it was pretty close to the canyon wall too when he got up there.
That arch shows up in Arizona place names. Real early in the 19th century as well, but we won't digress.
Okay.
Regardless, was this your first time down into the Nankweep Basin? I can't remember here.
Well, I've been on the lower end on raft trip, you know, to the Granary and stuff like that, and one of the earlier raft trips that stopped there.
Right, but this was your first time to hike in.
Right.
Got it.
Right. And it was not quite as sporty as some of the routes, but it was pretty sporty in places.
Okay. Yeah, there's the supai bench. There is one little spot that people can get concerned about.
Yeah.
And you guys walk right through there, no problem.
Yeah, we did. When we came back out, I said to CL, I'm not waiting for you guys because I know if I stand around, when we get there, it'll just make me more apprehensive.
Oh.
So I'm out. So on the way out, I just left, and I don't mean it in the wrong way. I just hiked a little faster and got ahead of them and got out past there and waited for them on the other side of that area on around a little farther.
Uh-huh. And for the transcribers, I just want to make sure that CL stands for Claude. What's Claude? He didn't like Claude, but what's his last name?
Let me look again, because every time I say it or think I've got it, it's wrong name. So let me
okay.
see if I can. In fact, Denise got that off of his obituary. Hold on 1 second while I get her. She'll help. Denise.
Yes.
What's the else's new name? Yeah. Sorry, she's going to get it.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. As many years as I knew him, I never, ever called him anything other than CL. And
cool.
So.
Yeah.
And his family and everything, as far as I know, nobody ever did. He wasn't happy with that name. And even his middle name is something like Larace or something like that. It's L-A-R.
L-O-R.
A-C-E, Lorace.
Okay.
L-O-R-A-C-E.
Well, C-L is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's much happier with that. Probably growing up, it was easier.
And was that C-L's first time in Tanakawip as well?
Yes.
And the third person you were hiking with, did you get their name?
That's where I wish I had C-L's notebooks. No, I don't remember. I know he had gone to school with CL. He was a tall, thin guy, fairly wealthy, had his own business and stuff, but he's from Scottsdale.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
Okay, no worries. So, first day probably down to the creek bed there, and then second day off to the arch?
Correct.
And then back to the creek bed and third day out, or did you do something else?
No, we kept, then we went down to the river because we were not, you know, we're back a mile or so from the river where you drop into that lower wash.
Right.
You're not all the way out at the end where it dumps into the Colorado.
Yep.
And that was, just a side. Again, there was a couple down there, a guy and a woman, and he told us later when we went out, he says, tell the rangers to come and get me. I'm not hiking out that trail. I don't know if he ever got out or not. I'm sure he got out, but I'm not sure how he got out. That was the question.
Oh, my.
But he was pretty shook by the time they got down there. The woman didn't seem to be too concerned, but the guy was pretty concerned. And they stayed there all the time we were there. So we were there 5 days.
Oh, my. And that's a nice time nice time of year and a lovely, lovely length of trip.
Yeah. And we see lots of stars. It was beautiful down there.
Mm.
And then the next day we went up Horse Thief and the Quagga Drainage back to the camp via a river to Nakawip.
So you did the whole loop there?
Yeah, around Nakawip Mesa.
Nice.
And then the next day, another guy came down, or maybe he had showed up the day before, but in any case, he was looking for somebody to go up on Nakawip Mesa with him.
Okay.
And I'd always wanted to go up on one of the mesas. I said, I'm in. So So he and I went up on that Great Mesa and walked over to the edge over the river and kind of scouted around on top of the mountain and then back down.
Nice.
Yeah.
A little sporty there, right near the top, to find that one little chute that sort of gets you up there.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do you remember about that?
Again, I wish I remember the young man's name, because I have no idea who he was or anything other than, you know, he came in and we had talked over what was going on and what we had been doing and what he was doing. And he said he wanted to go up on that Great Mesa, and did we want to go along. And Cielo and the other guy were pretty tired at that time, and they wanted to rest up before the walk out the next day.
Okay.
So they said they were going to pass it. But I didn't know if I'd ever get a chance again, so I said, sure, and went with him up there. I remember you still went around the backside, not the riverside, but the other side.
Right.
And kept crawling up a set of kind of rock falls, and keep working your way up. And there was a little notch you could push yourself up through it once you get to the top. And that's the way we went up.
Excellent. Nice. And the retreat, the way home was just as easy? Scrambled right back down?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we came right back down. I don't remember. I can tell you the times I was scared was more crossing the river in that little boat than any of the hanging off the cliffs. But
I don't blame you. And then the hike out was uneventful, it sounds like.
Uneventful, right.
Good.
We had read all the stuff about the people, the guys, two guys from Flagstaff who had gone down there in running shoes and froze their feet coming out and all that kind of stuff. But we didn't have any weather going out. We got out fine.
The two guys, would that have been Bob Packard and Ken Walters?
I believe so. Again, it was in one of the running magazines or one of the articles I read somewhere.
Okay.
And it was quite a story about them going down there and running shoes. And they were in good shape. They felt they'd have no problem. But that long contour around through the Supai was in snow, and they lost a couple toes and stuff.
Right. Indeed. Okay. So that is... a lovely week, 6-day adventure there in October. And where did you go from there?
Well, then it was not till 1984, and then it was June 23rd through July 4th. It was my second Grand Canyon raft trip.
Okay.
And during that one, we did quite a bit of hiking up several canyons, and when we got to Havasupai, I told them I wanted to go up to the village and back, and they said, have at it. So I took off, and I was in really good shape in those days. So I made it up to the village, had a quick soda, turned around, came back down.
Nice.
A long time, the rest of them were horsing around in the water down at the river.
So tell me about that trip. Who do you remember was on it? And
pardon?
How did you sign up for that trip? Was it just, let me just raft the river again. I'll just sign up and...
Yeah, a couple of people that I worked with, they had gone on the first trip.
Okay.
Decided they wanted to do a full trip all the way through, and they wanted it to be oar powered.
Okay.
And so we put this together, and I think there was probably 8 or 9 of us from work, and then the rest of the folks, you know, were just other people.
Uh-huh.
And it was with Grand Canyon Youth Expeditions again.
Okay.
Then we did lots of hiking. I mean, then they were still not, I mean, at that point, you were still drinking water out of the river and a lot of stuff like that. It was still before some of the health stuff crept in, but nobody had any problem.
Okay. Did they give you a cup? Was like, wait, here's your cup, and everybody gets a cup?
No, they told us to bring a cup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bring your own.
It was in those days, the big cup was a Sierra cup, the wide mouth thing with a kind of shallow, but a wire-like handle on it.
Yeah, there's a metal, almost like a mini gold pan, if you will.
Yeah, right, exactly. exactly.
With a little looped metal handle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can look at the bottom of your pan, see if you have any gold left in there.
And who do you remember your river guides were?
Oh, boy. I don't remember.
Okay.
It's one of those things that my regrets are I didn't write any of that stuff down.
No worries.
JL was going to go on that trip, and then he, at the last minute, or not the last minute, but about 3 or 4 months ahead, couldn't make it. So he did go on another one by himself, with his daughter. But he did do another one that went all the way through.
Okay. And this is 1984, so the river is going to be kind of high and kind of constant, like maybe 40,000 throughout, or was it going up and down? Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I do. That big, when you're still in Marble Canyon and there's that big chunk that sits in the middle of the river.
Yep.
And the water was almost over the top of it.
Okay.
And it was unbelievable how much water was going down through there. But they had no trouble letting us roam and letting us goof off and things like that. I don't know if they felt it was high enough we weren't going to hurt ourselves or whatever, but we had a lot of fun on that trip.
Great. Were they rowing the 18-foot rafts, or were they rowing the snouts, the 22-foot rowing snout?
No, I think it was the 18-foot rafts.
Okay.
A couple things that happened on that. The friends of my family, he was from Ohio, he lived in Texas, but he heard about it, he wanted to go along, so he went along. Unfortunately, he got a wicked bite from a scorpion or something one night, so he had a big, ugly welt on his leg for the balance of the trip, but he had a great time.
Okay.
There was an older fella who was, I guess he was kind of on there as a courtesy, but he ran a dude ranch down here in Tucson over to the west, over, I got to get my maps out. And he had another one that he was part of where he ran up in Wyoming. So he was a real thin guy, leathery, but he had evidently done several river trips because anytime he wanted to row, he was in the seat. So, again, I wish I knew his name. I just don't know his name.
Huh.
And I was trying to think. And then we had the boat I was in just below when you leave Phantom Ranch, just not too far down, just past where the trail turns up the canyon going up Bright Angel. There's a rapids there, and it wasn't a big rapids, but our oarsman got thrown out of the boat.
Oh, no.
So we grabbed him, pulled him back in. When they got to lower lava, it was too big. They wouldn't let us ride through that one. They made us walk around, and they took the rafts through one at a time at that point. But we did get to go through one farther down. Crystal is what I'm thinking. They made us walk around Crystal, but then at Lava Falls, they let us go through on that one.
Okay.
And then we came out at place where you can bring the rafts out, and they bring buses and stuff down to the river.
That's Diamond Creek?
Diamond Creek, correct.
And that's where you exited?
That's where we exited, yep.
Okay. Nice. And you got to run lava?
Yes, we got to run lava, but not Crystal.
Okay. So they must have still been wanting to, boats were heavy and they needed to make that move, I suppose, to the right.
When they're coming through there.
Yeah, and didn't want to risk a long swim for anybody, and that's good. Nice. And that, yes, it would have been hot, but you didn't mind the heat for June, July?
No. It was hot. I mean, when the rains would come in the afternoon once in a while and the water would pour off the canyon walls, it was so cool. I mean, it was an entirely different experience than the other time I'd been in the canyon. Because most of the time I was never there in the summer. I was there in the fall or the spring. So
cool.
That's scene with the water pouring off and everything else. It was really impressive.
Nice. Yeah, really beautiful. And it cools things off too, so.
Yes. Yeah, for a while.
So that's enjoyable. So as you were on that river trip, June, July, were you thinking about future hikes? Boy, you know, that'd be an interesting place to hike. You know, were you kind of scoping that out?
Well, I have to be honest. CL did most of the planning. He would call me up and say, okay, here's where we're going to go.
Okay.
And plan for 5 or 6 days. And I don't mean this wrong or being too brave, but he knew that if I was going, I was in shape and I was going to be able to make it.
Right.
There wasn't, if he could make it, I was going to make it. So,
right.
That, and even though our difference in age was 12 or 13 years, he was really a strong person for his age.
Cool. So he knew he wasn't going to slow you up.
Right.
That's great.
And that, you know, that one that sat down in Anchorage, you know, I think he stayed around just because the other guy kind of was tired, so he CL didn't want to leave him alone, so he stayed down with him. But I think CL could have easily gone up on Anchorage as well, but he didn't.
Okay. Nice. So then what did you do?
Let me see. Then 11, 17 to 18, it was actually 3 days, 19, a Havasu Pi backpack with worker people from work.
I'm sorry, what was the date and year on that?
November 17, 18, 84.
So a nice fall trip then. Great.
Yeah. It's interesting because along the way you always find people that are kind of characters are interesting. There was a woman, she had two kids, and I think one was like 5 and the other one was 6. And they were going down, and so we talked to her a little bit. She said, oh, no, they hike all the time. And she was carrying most of the gear. She said, it comes out with the narrow canyon, and you hit the wider canyon. She says, we're going to camp there for the night. We're not going to go all the way to the campground. And then they say, we'll get out of the campground. We'll take 2 or 3 days coming out. And, you know, I don't know, I never grew up with anybody's parents like that, you know, that kind of thing. So it was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder where those kids are now, and I wonder what their upbringing did to them or for them.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're looking at, 35, 40 years almost.
Yeah,
and,
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, Seattle had taken a group down to Havasu Pi from his church. And they had a bad accident. One of the horses that were carrying stuff down, as it passed them, kicked a kid in the chest.
Oh.
And so they had a real heck of a time getting them out of there. And they were able to get them up far enough where the helicopter could drop in and pick them up and take them off.
Wow.
He survived and everything. But I've always been pretty respectful of those big animals, so I'm glad I am. But some people think that, you know, it's just a horse. What's it going to do to me, you know? But this horse just hit him right smack in the chest.
Wow. Wow. But that didn't happen on your November trip.
No.
Okay. Do you remember how many people roughly were in your group?
There were probably 10 of us. And when we got down there, we spent that night, and then the next day we went down to the big falls, the big drop there.
Down to Mooney?
And down the river a little bit where you could go underneath the rocks up into the little underground ponds or pools or whatever you want to call
it. Nice.
But nobody went up into the river.
Okay.
And then the next day walking out.
Okay. So 2 nights. Okay. And during 83 and 84, you weren't doing any Trans Canyon running, any rim to rim running.
Not yet.
Okay.
1985.
Okay. All right. Just double checking here. But you had been into Havasu before.
Yes.
Yeah. And you'd come up from the river, so that was becoming pretty well known to you.
Yes. Yeah. And I went all the way to the village, so I went beyond the campgrounds even. I went up to the village to the store to get a soda.
Right.
And then turn around and come back down.
Which is a 20-mile round day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And CL was not on the Havasu hike?
No, he was not.
Okay. And then where did you go?
Okay, then October 5th was the second Grand Canyon north to south, rib to rib. And this one, I'll give you a little background. Some of the guys I worked with were runners as well, and we'd go out and run along the canals and stuff in Phoenix. And one Sunday morning, we're running along, and one of the guys by the name of Jerry Johnson says, "Hey, somehow we're coming on. What's your biggest challenge or your favorite run or something like that?" And he said, "Oh, I did a rim to rim. You know, back in, it was like 3 years ago or 2 years ago. The same time I did mine, but I didn't know him then."
Huh.
And so I said, "Oh, yeah, I remember that. I said, I did that as well." And so then I got the rest of them talking, and pretty soon it was, "Oh, come on, we got to get this together and get it done." So I'm not sure why, but I said, "Okay, I'll organize this." So I got us a van, and we got a driver who would drop us off and drive around to the other side, and the whole deal. So we got reservations on both north and south side, and we went up there and came to the rim at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was cold and scary, and we dropped off the rim. But you could see, it's pretty quick after you get down, you could see where you had to go. So it was really interesting, and I don't think I ever got over that view, even though I did this many, many times. It that look across the canyon when you see that other side where you got to go up. Anyway, everybody made it. The one guy, I don't know. I'll tell you his name. He's Rex Tanner, and he's from Phoenix, and he's now done 50 Grand Canyon crossings.
Wow. Wes? He's going Wes? Sorry, his first name?
Rex.
Rex. R-E-X. Got it. Thank you.
Rex Tanner. Yeah. And he's going up this spring, he tells me, and he's the same age as my wife, so he's 72.
Okay.
He says he still thinks he's got one more in him.
Wow.
COVID kind of knocked down his opportunity, so he kind of stopped at that 50 for a couple of years. But when I talked to him, he was here, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and he said, "You know, it's a lot harder training now than it used to be."
Dear. No kidding.
He got that right. So, but in any case, the funny part about this was we got over to coming up Bright Angel. Because we didn't have anybody support us, so we had to come up with the water stops.
Ah.
And we got to the first water stop on the way down, and we still had like a mile and a half, I think it is, to go from that point. And I look back, and here comes Rex coming up behind me. And I stopped, and I said, "Rex, what's going on?" He says, "I don't think I can make it. I'm going to go in here and call a ranger and have him come down and get me." And I said, "Okay." So I kept going on up, and, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, I turn around, and here comes Rex again. I said, "Rex, what happened?" He said, "Well, I picked up the phone, and, you know, it was a direct line. They rang up there, and they said, you know, what can they do?" And he said, "Well, I'm really tired. I need somebody to come and get me and help me out." And they said, "Where'd you start?" And he said, "The North Rim." And they said, "What time?" He said, 6 o'clock in the morning. They said, "You're doing great. Sit down and rest. Make it on out by yourself." So they were coming to get him, and he did make it out the rest of the way by himself. So, but it was pretty funny. He thought that, you know, if he called them, they'd come and help him, you know, put him on a horse or something. But they weren't up to that. They figured if you did that, you deserved it. So you sit down and rest for a while, then you'll make it out. So he did.
Well, what a great answer to somebody who clearly, you know, has really made it that far and is fatigued, of course, and tired. But
yeah.
But keep going. You'll get there.
Yeah. And there's water there. There's
yeah.
shade.
Yep.
Now, what do you got to complain about? You know,
and
the rest of it will make it all out.
What was his crossing time? Do you remember?
I do have a whole bunch of those. Maybe I can see here. I'm looking through some papers here.
Okay.
Okay. 529.01.
529?
Yep.
I would have told, if I was a ranger on the other end of that phone, I'd say, hey, just chill, you're going to be just fine. 520, wow.
Yeah, that's 529. Yeah.
And what was your time?
My time, if I can find it here. By 49. I was just behind him.
You were 20 minutes behind him. He beat you. Oh, my gosh. So this sounds like a pretty low key. It wasn't like you were, you know, getting attention or had banners or T-shirts or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
But
we kept it low key. We'd been kind of told that, you know, this wasn't, you know, by rumors and stuff, this wasn't something the Park Service liked to have people do. So we didn't put a banner across the trailhead or anything like that. And when people got to the top, the driver had made it around, and he kind of casually wrote down everybody's times as they came out. And we went to dinner that night. We had breakfast the next morning because we stayed overnight there on the south end.
Oh, what a good idea.
Pardon?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, and then we drove back Sunday morning. All of us suffering and starting to suffer. The worst day was Monday morning. Monday morning is worse than Sunday morning. It's the lactic acid stuff takes time to build up, and you know, late Sunday evening you start feeling sore, and then Monday morning you walk around backwards because it's easier to walk backwards than it is frontwards, and going upstairs hurt. And so, but that was the beginning of the series that we ran every year after that for till 96 or 97, something like that.
Well, so that's going to go, this is October of 1984, so that's going to run for basically 12 or 13 years.
Right. Yeah. 1985.
Okay.
Did I get that right? Yeah.
Is that right? October 5th, 1985?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, October 5th, 1985.
Okay.
Then a week later, CL and I, as I mentioned, CL worked for the Farmer's Home Finance thing, and he had some dealings with the Havasupai.
Okay.
And through their attorney, they reached out for us to the head or the chief or the head of the council, the Havasupai, because he wanted to get up on Matt Cat and Signal and up that way.
Huh.
And they normally would not let anybody go up there. So this attorney evidently worked it out. And when we got down there, we went in to see him, and he told us, you know, you're going to be up here. Don't touch anything. Leave everything there. Don't bring anything back.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff. And so this was October 12th to the 17th. And we went, they showed us a little kind of semi-hidden trail. If you didn't pay attention, you probably wouldn't even notice it. It took you up on when you're going down on the right side and up into that whole area up on top there.
So there was a trail from the creek up to the Supai, up to the Esplanade then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And there were a bunch of horses and burros running around there.
Yep.
And the downside that we found out later that the tribe, you know, once in a while a horse takes off, they don't go chase it down. They know where they're at. And I don't know if once in a while they go round them up or whatever, but they the downside is they fouled all the water up there. We were having a hard time finding water that was halfway clean. So we were, there had been some rain, and there were some on the plateau, there were these little bowls, and there was water in some of those bowls. So we put our ground cloths over them and covered them up so the water wouldn't evaporate. And then when we came back at night, we'd suck the water out and use it for cooking and stuff. So we actually ended up cutting that trip short one day. And we really wanted to tie those canyons together. And I got if you could wait just 1 second, I'll get a map because I can tell you the canyons we were trying to get through.
Yeah, that'd be great.
As you can tell, I'm back.
I hear the map going, Russell, Russell.
Yeah, we wanted to get down into, we came out of Havasu and went around Carbonate. And kept going around and past Ugualta Point, I think that's. Then we went over by Mount Sinyala.
Sinyala, yep.
And then we dropped down into Sinyala, and that's where we found water, plenty of water, but it was all just. So then we went over, and we were going to go down to try and come up Matcat, and then go over one more. So we did get down into Matcat, and we ended up working our way all the way to the river and back.
Okay.
And then we retraced our steps and came out back around the same way.
Well, that's a nice hike.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was nobody whatsoever. Not even airplanes, as I remember, no noise or anything.
Nice.
And so we thought we were doing a good deed. We said, hey, you got a bunch of horses up there. He said, yeah, that's all right. They were pretty casual about the horses running around there.
So, were there...
This was all because CL had this relationship with this attorney,
yeah,
who was the attorney for the tribe in their dealings with the federal government.
Do you have roughly any idea of how many horses you might have seen up there?
Oh, we probably saw a good 8 or 10 horses, and then another half dozen burros or donkeys or whatever you want to call them.
Okay.
They were mules.
Okay. Yeah. So burros.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So instead of coming overland from the Great Thumb, coming in that way, you basically down Havasu and up on the Esplanade and then east, to get to Matcat.
Right.
Okay.
Now, we later on came down Great Thumb and kind of tied that all together.
Okay. But that's not on the next trip. That's going to be a couple trips later.
Yeah, that's the one where Frank lost his watch.
Okay. All right. What else do you remember about that October 1985? Soup by the Matcat and back journey.
I guess the biggest thing was the shortage of water and the fact that the little water we could find was the animals had fouled it, so you didn't even want to, you know, pump it. I'm sure we would have if we'd been desperate. In fact, we used chlorine most of the time.
Okay.
And we filled our bottles at one of the little sinkholes and we let the chlorine set for a few minutes and started drinking. And I looked in there and I said, see, there's stuff swimming around in here. He said, don't look.
Oh, my gosh.
Just drink. Drink. It could have been all kinds of worms and stuff that have bothered me for ever since, but I don't know. We didn't get sick or anything, called it. We made it back out.
Well, think of it as protein. It's all right.
And it was one of those trips where not many people get over that area to have a soup pie. So
right.
It's kind of unique to that.
Very nice. Okay, and then what came after that?
Okay, then it was April 18th to the 24th, 1986. And this one was a pretty good-sized group. I think we had two cars. And CL's boss and Frank and a couple other people with his work. And myself. Anyway, there was probably six or seven of us. And this one was the other one to go the other way. We went down, drove out Pasture Wash, down to Great Thumb, and then the Keyhole Natural Bridge, and then 140-mile Canyon, and then Oyo. And then that's the one where, on the way down, Frank lost his watch. And on the way back out, CL found it, but he didn't tell CL till Frankie found it. And when he got to Flagstaff that afternoon to have dinner, he gave the watch to the waitress and had her come around and say, does anybody lose this watch? And, of course, Frank fell out of his chair. He couldn't believe it.
Okay, let's take that from the top. So this is a spring trip, 1986.
Right.
And Frank is Frank Barrios. That's Barrios.
Correct. That's correct.
Yep. And CL, and then a couple other people as well.
Right. CL's boss, and again, and another gentleman who did hike with us a couple times.
Okay.
And myself. So that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I think there was one other guy. There was all guys, and a couple of them didn't do much of the hiking. Once they got down, they just hung out until we turned around to come back out. Because, they were pretty blasted when we got down there.
So this is out the, you drove out the, what's called the Deer Trail on the Great Thumb?
Yes. Well, let me go to my map and make sure. It's a Jeep Trail, and it goes on the western end of the Great Thumb.
Right. Now, there's a couple ways in there. One is the Tahuta Point route, but there's another way to get down that's a little further west.
That's the one we used.
The further west one?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure if we get use that one, CL would either talk to Harvey or had it from his book that we could get back to it.
Right. Okay.
Well, we dropped down through there and then contoured around just below the cliffs to Katagama Terrace.
Yep.
And we stayed in there. And then there was a Katagama Point and back up one of the side canyons. And then down Olo as far as we could go. And then over to Keyhole and down to the Natural Bridge down there. And we couldn't go very far down Olo. There was a pretty big drop at one point. We turned around.
Right. And did you go over to Keyhole? So it if we get this right, it Keyhole first, and then it's Olo, and then it's Mad Cat as you move to the west. This sequence of drainages. At Keyhole, there's a natural arch, and there's also at the very top, there's a cairn, a pretty big pile of rocks that has a really fancy register in it. Did you?
No, I don't remember. I remember going down to the arch. We did make it down to the arch.
Okay.
And then, like I said, we made it into the upper end of Olo and down to about where Mad Cat comes out. Where the drainage is going down to Keyhole meets Olo has got kind of runs perpendicular to the canyon that runs out of where the Keyhole Natural Bridge is.
Right. There's a fault that runs through there, and you can kind of walk the fault up out of one drainage and down into the next and up and down kind of as you go west. Was that the route you took?
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of water in the esplanade in there at these certain levels. There'll be these little dripping springs.
We did have water for that trip, so that must have been where we went to get the water.
Okay.
We didn't have the problem we had in the fall out on the other end of that big plateau.
Okay.
And we really didn't tie them together. We really wanted to, but just didn't manage to work it out to tie together from that other trip somehow across to where we were at so we could say we tied that chunk together, but we didn't make it.
Well, it sounds like if you got to Metcat from the east, you were tying it pretty good.
Okay, then we went to Olo, and then we were on that Chicopanagi Mesa.
Uh-huh.
And there's a drainage that comes down off of that. We made it to where that drainage drops off to the other side of the Metcat. We did not go down into Metcat.
Got it. Okay. So there's a saddle between Olo and Metcat, and you made it up to the saddle.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can only say we saw it.
Yeah. Well, you got a little bit more to go back and just finish that off and come back. It'll be fine.
Yeah, just putting that little part up.
Yeah. Nice. Was it unusually hot, or was it still pretty nice that April?
No, it was very nice.
Okay.
We had good weather. I don't remember any bad weather on that one, unlike one of the other ones where we had snow coming out. This one was nice.
Mm, flowers?
I don't remember many flowers. On that plateau, it's kind of hit and miss because there's not a lot of dirt. But I don't remember flowers particularly, no.
Okay. And did you go back the same route that you came down?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, when we went up the hillside, you know, we had kind of just coming down the hillside, we kind of banged around and everybody just kind of kept grabbing some branches as they came down. And that's where Frank lost his watch. So coming back up out of there, nobody even thought there was a remote possibility of finding his watch. Although we all said we'd look. And sure enough, she all found it.
That's amazing.
It was.
So on the way back, he just put that watch right in his pocket and kept going.
Yeah. We ate a little Mexican restaurant that's down in the neighborhood, off Route 66, back in the neighborhood there.
This is back in Flagstaff?
Yeah.
So was that El Charo?
Yeah, yeah. And he gave the watch to a waitress and said, you know, he said it all looked really beautiful.
That's amazing. Huh. And she just said, hey, did any of you lose this watch?
Right. That's what she said.
Huh.
And it was a rather ornate band because it had turquoise and stuff on it. So it wasn't
an
expensive band. I don't know how much the watch was worth, but the band had some nice turquoise on it. Well,
I bet Frank was really thrilled to get it back.
Oh, he was.
Nice. That's getting into some rugged country there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting, both our trips over there. Because if something happened, there's no way anybody's going to be able to find you easily, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're a ways out from help.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was 6 days.
Yes.
So it took a day to get out there, and then 2 or 3 days down and a couple days back, and then a day to drive back out.
Yeah, we did camp on the rim when it came out before we drove back.
Okay.
So when we got there, we just took off and went down.
Ah.
And like you said, some of the folks weren't in terribly great shape, so they just hung out well. GL and I and, what's this other guy's name? Anyway, we went out and checked out the other canyons and things. And the Keyhole.
Oh, okay. So some of the party just stayed on the Esplanade right where they got there.
Yeah. They were happy they got there.
Okay. Nice place to hang out. Right. Anything else about that trip that comes to mind?
Not really.
Okay. And then where did you from there?
August 9th and 10th, a friend of the family was here, and his son wanted to go down to the Grand Canyon. And I said, well, he wanted to go overnight. I said, well, you can't get a permit that fast anywhere reasonable. So I said, we can go to Havasu Pie probably. So I called him, and we got a night there.
Huh.
And so we went down to Havasu Pie on 8, 9, and back out on the 10th.
Okay. So two nights there?
Yeah. Well, one night, a day down, and then we turned around and came back out the next day.
Oh, so in on the 9th and out on the 10th. Okay. And did you go down to the campground and then walk down to Mooney? Did you get a chance to see that? Cool.
Yeah. We didn't go beyond there, though.
Okay.
He was okay shape, but he wasn't in great shape, so I was worried about getting him out more than anything. So.
Charlie, do you remember how crowded it was on that trip? August, it's kind of hot.
It wasn't crowded at all. There was nobody there.
Okay.
I don't know why. I would have thought there would have been because it was August, but there was nobody there. We were pretty much by ourselves.
Huh. Okay. Maybe because it was August. I mean, well, no, back to school. School hadn't started yet.
No.
But it was hot. It would have been, you know, summertime hot monsoon time.
Yeah. And this guy was from Texas, so I was a little worried. You know, it was a pretty flat lander, and, you know, that there's some pretty good hills coming out of there and elevation gains and stuff.
Yep.
He managed it, yeah.
Okay. And then did you do a run that year? Is that the next one up?
Well, before I did the run, this is CL and Joe Blue and I, August 24th, we went up and went down to Indian Gardens. We went down to Indian Gardens across on the... the trail that goes parallel to the South Rim.
The Tonto?
Down South Kaibab to Phantom Ranch and then back up as part of our training for our Grand Canyon trip.
Okay. In a day?
Yeah. We just took a couple of water bottles and took off. We used to do a lot of silly things. But.
So let me get this right. So you're on the South Rim. You go down the Bright Angel to what is now called Havasu Pie Gardens.
Right.
And then east on the Tonto to the Kaibab Trail.
Right.
Down the Kaibab to the Colorado River. And then did you follow the river trail? Or did you cross the Black Bridge and then go down to the Silver Bridge?
I know we came back up the other, so whether we crossed the river to get to, I'm pretty sure we crossed the river.
Okay.
To get to the Silver Bridge and then come back up to Silver Bridge.
All right. So then that takes you down to Pipe Creek and then back up Pipe Creek to Havasu Pie Gardens and out.
Yep.
And did that in the day running?
Yeah, we ran. Well, we could get down running in about 2 to 2.5 hours. This was longer because of that that cut across on the Tonto.
Yeah.
That had another good hour because there's quite a bit of time in there.
Okay.
And then out in right around 3 to 3.5 hours.
Okay. So that's a 6.5 hour time. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And three of you there?
There were three of us, yeah. The other one is a guy by the name of Joe Velut, V-E-L-U-T. He started, he had lived in Flagstaff, but he also worked for the same agency, DL did, and he got transferred to Phoenix. And so... in the office there with CL, we got talking, and so he started running with us. and the longer runs and things like that.
Okay. And this is in preparation for your rim to rim that's coming up.
Right.
That's really good training. And again, at this point now, you're starting to use a lightweight running shoe, no more big clunky boots.
Right.
And
we had gone to, they were calling, you wrote it down here so I remember, Nike Lava Dome.
Okay.
And they were kind of the first cross between a running shoe and a hiking, light hiking boot. And that's what we started using after that. And then we tried all kinds of things after that as years went on.
And what sort of fanny pack did you have at that time? What were you doing for just a regular rucksack, or how were you carrying food and water?
The water bottles, we had hand bottles, so we could carry two bottles that way. And if we thought we needed the third one, we would strap to a belt that was tied to a fanny pack. The fanny pack wasn't terribly big. We just put in there, candy bars and, mostly sugar stuff to give you that little pump you need when you start to feel like you're crashing. And,
right.
And that was the start. During that same time, there was a guy, and I know you're going to ask me who and where, but anyway, he was developing the first goo-type things where you could, in the tubes and all that.
Yeah, it's carbohydrates in a tube. I mean,
Yeah. Well, I'd read about it, and so I sent the guy a letter, and I said, hey, he was doing research on it at that time. It wasn't a product yet. And I said, could we get some of that stuff? And he said, yeah, I'm not guaranteeing anything. Here's how you mix it, the proportions and all that. And he said, go ahead and try it, and let me know what you think. So that came up later in one of the other rim-to-rim runs that I used it, and I was fine until I ate an orange. And then the orange didn't settle with that stuff, and I ended up throwing it all up. So, anyway.
That was on a different run, though.
Yeah, that was a different run, yeah.
Well, let's keep that story in mind, because I will want to hear that again, because it is sort of crazy product development, which of course, now, we've all got these, the bar, Lifeweight. You go to a store now to go get some sort of Luna bar or something. There are 18 different varieties and 45 different flavors. And it's just absolutely amazing. But I don't see that much of the liquid, the goo type stuff anymore at all. It's all power bars.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. Now, I personally kind of like the other stuff better because the chewing effort and getting stuck in my teeth has always been annoying.
Oh.
There's the others, you kind of gulp it down and swirl it around a little bit and gulp it down. And
yeah.
Not too bad.
Okay.
But it was more carbohydrate focused, and a lot of stuff now is protein focused.
Right. And, of course, there's a difference in the amount of time your body's going to need to absorb that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So to make sure I understand this, you don't have a small backpack at all, no rucksack. You simply have a water bottle in each hand,
right,
and a small fanny pack,
right,
and that's it. No jacket. No. Are you running with a hat?
Yes.
Okay.
Or a visor.
Okay.
In a long time, I didn't even wear a hat for quite a while, but then my hair got thin enough, so I had to start being worried about that.
Okay.
And so I said, wear the hat. But and a lot of times with no shirt.
Okay.
And just in running shorts. So.
So a little cool to start, but once you were down there, it was all right.
Yeah. Well, it's like, most hikes, you want to start out cold because you're going to warm up. And
right.
That's the way this was. You start out, shivered a little bit, but pretty quickly you warm up.
So. Okay. So that was August 1986.
And then in October 2nd, was our third rim to rim.
And this is the third running event.
Yes. Yeah. This is the second one I organized. The other one was organized by the running club out of Tucson here.
Okay. Again.
And again, we had about a dozen people, something like that.
Where did you find these people at that time in 86?
Well, it's kind of a community of, well, I'm sure you know, of ultra runners and stuff like that. And one of the guys, the company I worked for most of that time was called GTE. It was a phone company. And one of the guys was 60 years old. He'd gotten overweight. He decided he wanted to lose some weight. So he started running up the hills because he was the one that went up to the towers to do maintenance on the microwave towers and stuff. And so he got to be really a very good runner, running Western States 100 and all those kind of things.
Wow.
But because he worked for GTE, he heard about from some other people at GTE about us doing this, and he wanted to get in on it. So we let him in. And then he brought, a few years later, he brought a friend, two friends of his, a woman and a man. And the woman ended up setting the fastest time of our group in the 12 or 13 years. She was faster than everybody.
Wow. Good for her.
I've looked her name up, too. She's still, at least in the early 2000s, was still running. I did keep pretty good records of everybody's times over that time. And so, it was mostly word of mouth because we didn't want to advertise anything. In fact, there was some time during that time period where there's a magazine called Ultra Running. And it comes out, I think, 10 times a year. And it has all the ultra riding events throughout the country and around the world in some cases. And they keep all the records and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, they had put out an article that talked about this guy from San Diego that wanted to organize a rim-to-rim. So he put the ad in the running paper, and he put an ad in something else. And somebody in the Park Service caught wind of it, and they just watched it. And when he showed up at the North Rim to start the run, they arrested him, hauled him off to Flagstaff, and he got fined for, an organized event. It was the deal.
Right, an organized event without a permit.
Pardon?
An organized event without a permit.
Right, right.
Okay.
And now, towards the end, I did get a letter, and I think I mentioned that before, but they were nice enough to let me continue that year. And then the next year, one of the other guys decided he'd pick it up, but it didn't go on after that. So we had 12 or 13 years there that we did it without any real hassle.
Okay. So for your October 2nd, 1986 run, again, was this just one van's worth of people?
Let me look. It might have. We did get to a little bigger bus eventually.
Hmm.
At one time, we had about 30 people.
Okay, wow.
That was getting dangerous as far as the number of people. Fifteen people on the second one in 1987.
Sorry, that was 1987, but for 86?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was 86. I'm sorry. Yeah, it went at the bottom of this page. I kind of had it. We started with 8 and went to 16, then 18, and 22, and 29, and 26, and 28, and 30. And then the last one, I didn't keep anything, but I would imagine that one was back down to about 10.
Okay. So for 86, what do you think your number was?
86.
Okay. So 16 people, that's 2 8 passenger vans.
We actually went to a small bus.
Okay.
And during that time, some dumb things, but one of the guys had been diagnosed with kidney cancer, and it was all encapsulated. They removed the kidney. He was fine. But when he got on the bus, we handed him a rock that was the shape of a kidney and said he had to carry it because he was going to be lighter than everybody else.
Wait.
Yeah, we were pretty mean sometimes.
You told this guy to carry a kidney-sized rock because he was like, he was going to be cheating? And he just like throw it right back at you. What did he do? Did he put it in his fanny pack?
Huh?
Did he put it in his fanny pack and run with it, or he just like...
Oh, no. Didn't carry it.
Just chuck it right back at you. Oh, my gosh.
It was just a joke with him. You know, that he had been involved since the beginning, and we told him he wasn't going to have any advantage by losing a kidney. So.
Okay.
And he's still alive and well and healthy today.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Very good. So 16 people, now the group's getting a little bigger. Did you, like, stagger your start, or were you all there kind of gaggled around at the top of the North Kaibab Trailhead and just took off?
We all just took off. Everybody kind of showed up there. You know, we had this bus, and so everybody brought all their gear out from their cabins,
okay. Threw
it in the bus, and he took us to the North Kaibab Trailhead, dumped us out, and we all stood around there for about 20 seconds taking pictures and stuff. And then everybody started yelling and took off.
Okay.
And stretched out across the trail. And when we got to the other side, people, I can tell you the range of times, maybe.
Yeah.
.431 was the fastest.
And who was that?
Huh?
Who was that?
That was a young guy by the name of Terry Moore. Well, actually, he's my age. We're the same age. And he did .431.
M-O-O-R-E?
M-O-O-R-E, right.
Okay.
And Dick Lane, who was the older guy that I told you about, who was 63 and Terry was 47, he was right behind him at 4:59.
Wow.
And Terry said, I'd look back, and if I could see him, I would run a little bit. And when I couldn't see him, I would walk. And so he would run, you know, trying to catch up. So there's a little gamesmanship there. That was might have been also the year that Terry got a big, bad blister on the bottom of his foot. And he went over to the dispensary and walked in and said, you know, I got this blister. They took the shoe off, and the woman who was a nurse or medical person said, oh, I know what you were doing. And so he had a big blister, probably 2 inches in diameter, maybe a little bigger than that, on the bottom of his foot.
From, wow.
Behind the pad backwards from the shoe slipping around on that. So we had never had anybody get seriously hurt. We had one guy that kicked a water bottle and it drove his toenail up into his toe.
Ugh.
But he pressed the way across without any problem.
Wow.
He just had a red shoe when he came out.
Yeah, I bet he did. Yuck. What was your time that year?
.628.
Well, that's very good. And who was the longest cross on that 1986 time?
Well, two guys. One of his name was Dave Fellows, and he had been an Olympian. He had qualified to be on the rowing team when we didn't go to the Russian Olympics. And he said he wasn't going to run, but he did a 7:20 just walking.
Wow.
And then the other one was a little bit of a story goes with this. There was a guy by the name of Dan Rice, R-I-C-E, and he he and I would ride bikes together and things like that, and did some triathlons together and stuff. And he said he wanted to do this, but he didn't want to pay the money. He didn't want to ride up the van. And I said, okay, just meet us at the trailhead.
Okay.
So we got to the trailhead, and I didn't see him anywhere. All he comes out the back of his truck. He had been sleeping in the back, and runs over the trail. Said, I'm ready. And I said, okay, let me go. He took off like a shot. And we all looked at him like, damn, you don't know. And sure enough, when we got to the guy, he was laying on one of the tables. And it took several hours for him to recover. And for his time was also 7:20. He walked out with eight fellows.
But then his vehicle's back on the north rim, so he had to turn around and go back.
Right. Excuse me. He had a friend that had said he would pick him up and take him back.
Okay. Okay. Well, Charlie, maybe we should put a comma in this interview series here.
Okay.
Because we've been yik-yakking for well over an hour, and we'll pick this up again for 1987, it sounds like.
All right. Well, I got a couple more in 86.
Oh, you do? Okay. So let's finish off 86 next time.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I got to put a star here so I remember.
And I'm gonna make a note of this too. Is there anything else you want to bring into the material that we've covered that I did not ask you about?
No, I just apologize for not remembering people's names any better than I do. I wish I remember some of them. The ones I've given you now is because I kept those records of the runs and what the times were and everything. But unfortunately, that was not true for any of the other stuff. So,
well, I'm thrilled with the people that you've brought into this oral history. So I, you know, Joe Blount and so Frank Barrios, I think you've done well.
Yeah.
Okay, then with that, this will conclude part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Charlie Schultz. Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin. Charlie, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.